It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a bipartisan bill in the state capitol would put ranked choice voting in place for Wisconsin's congressional elections. Sponsors from both parties joined the show to tell us how it would work and why now. First, parenting in normal times can be challenging. There's not one right way to go about being a mom or a dad, yet we can still find ways to feel like we're doing it wrong. Insecurities about parenting are a normal part of the experience, but the pandemic has made those smaller insecurities feel much more magnified in the last year. And our next guest says that's been especially true for moms. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, how has the pandemic changed the way you feel about being a mom or a dad? Has it made you worry or feel guilty more? Moms out there, do you feel like you've really taken the brunt of all of this in one way or another? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer Senior is an op-ed columnist at the New York Times. She's the author of the book All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. Her most recent column is titled Mothers All Over Are Losing It. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, nice to be back here. How are you?
Well, good. Now, what does the data that we have over this last year tell us about parental well-being right now?
It isn't good. I don't think that you actually even need data for that. I think this is one of the rare times where, like, your lived, perceived experience is probably going to be borne out in data. Although, there's one caveat I would add to that, which is right now, mothers definitely are feeling like they are doing a lot more childcare than fathers are while working. They report about twice as much. And it will be interesting to see whether time use diary data actually says that when that finally comes in, because, of course, our perceptions of how much we do and what actually, in fact, we do can sometimes not quite track. But we know that women are losing, have lost their jobs at a much faster rate than men. Four times as many women lost their jobs in September as men. I think it was nearly a million women. It was 865,000 or something like that. Women dropped out of the workforce in September alone. I mean, the numbers are really devastating. So it would stand to reason that a lot of them have more childcare responsibilities generally during COVID. Women have been losing their jobs more. But also, while they've been working, they are also, they seem to be doing more childcare, than their husbands. And you know, parental affect is just, it ain't good, right? Moods among parents right now, they're reporting more anxiety, more depression, more insomnia. Studies are pretty consistent on that.
Let's look back pre-pandemic a little bit, because you share some interesting data that shows that moms can have a tendency toward what you call a self-recrimination. Surveys where moms were asked to rate how they were doing, where they were falling short or saw themselves falling short as parents versus what their kids thought about them. What kind of things do we know even before the pandemic?
Right. Okay. So this stuff really, I plump like a sponge when I talk about this. I get very excited because you are referring to the work of Ellen Galinsky, who is the president of the Work and Family Institute. And she had this very inspired idea, I think in 1999. She interviewed over 1,000 kids, a representative national sample, to ask them to grade their parents on how they were doing. And what she was interested in was this, you know, this refrain that working women have in their head, right? This soundtrack that we have, self-recrimination, which is, oh my God, I don't spend enough time with my kid. I don't see them enough. They must miss me terribly. She was looking at 8 to 18-year-olds, and only 10% of them reported really missing their mothers. Like 90% of them said that they saw their mothers plenty. Where we scored lowest was self-regulation. We yell a lot. That was where our rock bottom lowest score was for losing it. Like, this is pre-pandemic. This was in, you know, 1999. We were bad. We just, you know, and so for all mothers who think that they're terrible because they're constantly snapping at their children or really yelling at their kids, it turns out it's a very, very common thing.
And now here we are in the pandemic. And again, as you write, families are stuck in the house together a lot more. There's are you doing your virtual schooling now instead of just what happened at school today? There's a lot more reasons to snap and yell. What do we know about if that has been a bigger problem even than before?
Right. So, you know, this is the sort of thing that, like, I don't think that there are any granular studies that are yet doing this. You can only go anecdotally. What I think is so interesting is that the reports are, like, coming from everywhere that mothers and tempers seems to be, like, just this theme, to the point that our own kind of parenting columnist opened up a line for parents to scream into the telephone, like mothers specifically, to yowl. And hundreds of moms, like, phoned in just to vent and howl. I hear about it all the time just because of the book that I wrote. I mean, people are constantly reaching out to me and saying, is this normal? I'm dangling at the end of my tether. There are stores of anger, gushers of fury I didn't even know were there that my kids are tapping into. So this is hitting us where we live. We already were really bad at self-regulation. And now we're just uncorking, it seems, with even more abandon. And it plays into two other things while we're at it. Mothers already scored very low among adolescent children for, like, not having a clue about what their kids are up to. So now our kids are, like, locked in their rooms talking to their friends because this is the only way to socialize, or they're remote schooling because this is the way that they go to school. So we really don't know what's going on in their lives. It's yet another way that we feel totally out of it. And also, parents get low marks for not starting family traditions, for sort of not having the wherewithal, because why would we? We're, like, fried. We have nine things going on at once. And so now every parent I know, it's kind of a high luxury item, but it's something that parents are beating themselves up about nonetheless, which is that they haven't made use of this time, right? Like, I've had this uninterrupted stretch of time with my children, and I'm not making it meaningful. I'm not making it count. We're not doing anything. We're just watching reruns of Park and Rec, you know, Parks and Rec, which, by the way, I think is okay. That's what I do. But, you know, like, what's wrong with that? But, you know, apparently this is yet another occasion to beat yourself up.
Yeah. Can we have some kind of, like, mass blessing or something to give the grace of some slack? Like, this is tough times and it's okay.
Totally. If I could, like, you know, do some kind of mass absolution for everyone, I totally would. I mean, I think there are several things to say about this. First of all, no one is holding up well, right? I mean, very few parents, everyone, like, in fact, I had an open Facebook thread going about this, and there would be a couple of parents who would weigh in and say, I think I'm really, like, you know, doing great. And then I would get all of these messages from people privately saying, who are these freaks? And are they reading the room? Like, honestly, really? They think they're killing it? And if you do think you're killing it, that's wonderful. But I think that a lot of kids are going to emerge from COVID and share stories and be like, was your mom kind of also, like, losing it a lot? Like, we're going to discover fairly similar stories. The other thing I would say about this is that, you know, you don't have, like, the opportunity to grow if you don't have conflict in your life. And so to the extent that, like, we repair these moments, that, like, if we're in this cycle of kind of losing it and then repair and then healing and then losing it and then healing again, okay, so your kids are watching us make the mistake and then watching us correct the mistake. That's not the worst thing that can happen.
We're talking to Jennifer Senior. She wrote the piece, Mothers All Over Are Losing It, for the New York Times. She's author of the book, All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, what has your experience been like as a parent during the pandemic? Do you feel pressure? Do you feel guilt? Moms in particular love to hear from you. Our guest says moms in particular taking the brunt of a lot of this. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Could you use a phone line where you could just call and scream a little bit? This one's probably not it, but tell us about that feeling. 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Jennifer Senior, author of the book All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood, talking about her piece for the New York Times called Mothers All Over Are Losing It, looking at parenting during the pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-123 to share your experiences, maybe feelings of guilt or accomplishment along the way, maybe a little of both. 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Doug is with us in Lancaster. Doug, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have been a stay-at-home dad for about 15 years now, and I have really, truly enjoyed it. But since last March, when the pandemic started, it has become exponentially more difficult. I'm actually calling for my second day on my new job because I needed to get out and get out of the rut that I've been in for the last now. Parenting my kids has always been great, but having to do the virtual schooling, and then for two of my children, we actually did a homeschool curriculum without the school, has just been more stress than I could handle. And it's been a game changer. If anybody's doing this full time, you know, good luck. And, you know, if you don't have any support from the schools, good luck even more. I truly admire teachers more than I ever did before since all this began. But I think my kids have also noticed my stress levels increasing and whatnot as well. I hope the change in routine will alleviate some of that.
Doug, thank you so much for sharing that story. Doug, Jennifer is not alone with that added stress of virtual and or homeschooling, kind of putting those stress levels over the top.
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm in awe that he tried, and I know that a lot of parents have been doing these kind of hacks and workarounds. First of all, that's a line in my column. He probably doesn't even know it, but that this exactly, parents everywhere are now appreciating teachers more than they ever did, because, like, now we know, in case there was ever any doubt, this is an incredible skill to be able to hold a child's attention and to teach them and to, you know, have them absorb what you're trying to, you know, say. This, anyone who thinks that they can just go and do this is kidding themselves. It's years of experience that make a good teacher a good teacher. The other thing to say about all this is that this is, I think, one of the problems that, you know, COVID has sort of turned us into. We're now 20th century parents, where we feel like we have to be cultivating our children and be present. And we're 1950s parents, where we're cooking and we're doing the laundry, right? We're doing all these things that we used to, like, get takeout. I mean, now there's more takeout because the world is opening up slightly. But, you know, all these things, you know, we're living very hard in our houses. So there's that. And in some cases, we're going back to, like, frontier parenting, where we're also schooling our children. So we're like, we're doing everything practically except growing our own food. You know, it's like we've become this kind of this tiny outpost of production. And it's impossible if you've also got a job. It's impossible even if you don't have a job. It's a lot to do. It's a lot.
Doug, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Now, Jennifer, this is an individual problem for Doug and for a lot of families. So many families around the country. At what level, though, should we be thinking about this as a collective problem, something that maybe somewhere higher up we could have done more so it wasn't such an individual scramble for so many parents?
Well, yes, you are now singing my tune. I mean, first of all, there are many the nuclear family was never supposed to assume this burden, right? This was never the way that nature probably intended it. We lived in larger groupings, whole groups of people took care of kids at once. Obviously, schools play a huge role in, you know, the essentials of not just, you know, in instruction and. But I think that more to the point, but also for aftercare and things like that, I mean, we have no child care system in the United States that's in any way rational or affordable or accessible and much less, you know, or universal. This is something that I have believed my whole life the government ought to, you know, provide, as well as paid maternity and paternity leave, and it doesn't. And we might for the first time have a serious conversation about what a real child care system would look like, a subsidized child care system would look like. I mean, because this is the United States, it might come from companies. I don't think that's ideal. I think it should be government subsidized ultimately. I think that's the only way for everybody to participate and to make use of it. But, you know, there's got to be something. There's got to be something. It's untenable.
We're talking to Jennifer Senior, author of All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood, looking at parenting during the pandemic. Back to your calls now. Laura is with us in Madison. Laura, hi.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I do work out of my house part-time, but I'm home with my kids. I have three teenagers, and it's been really rough. We've managed the last year pretty well, but there's been something about these last few weeks for me that's been really brutal, and I think it's just that I'm looking down the barrel of a year of this. You know, we're coming up on the year anniversary of the pandemic, and we are just in survival mode. I feel like I'm just trying to hang on there.
Well, good luck. More power to you, Laura. And you are not alone in that. Jennifer, I remember last March thinking, wow, this is going to be a rough few weeks. And here we are a year later. And yes, there's this cumulative impact.
I think, first of all, I'm totally with her. I think, and three kids and three teenagers. Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about it. But here's what I would also say. I think people are losing it not only because it's the one-year milestone, but because we finally have hope. So we're finally allowing ourselves to feel all of the things that we were very aggressively repressing. And, the second people feel hope, it becomes people become very enervated. You know, there's this kind of wild energy that starts to happen. I think it's for this reason that there are more suicides in the spring. You know, the second people feel any stirrings of optimism, it's actually a cause also for tremendous anxiety about what if your hopes are not fulfilled, and great impatience. There's just, it's a very uncomfortable kind of tension that almost arises from hope.
And briefly, Jennifer, as we wrap up, I don't know, do you have thoughts on maintaining a more hopeful mindset as we hopefully get closer to that happier time?
Well, you know, what's funny is that I think that we are going to suddenly find ourselves in a world transformed almost in a way that not quite in the way that, like, it's not going to be like a flip of a switch. But I think one day we're going to look up and things will be like appreciably better. And we'll be able to compare experiences and we will realize really that we were not outliers. We were not freaks. We were going through some version of what our neighbors were going through and our dearest and our nearest. You know, I really believe that. And there'll be solace and solidarity in that.
It's a good place to leave it. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jennifer Senior, columnist for The New York Times, author of the book All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. She'll be moving on to become a staff writer at The Atlantic next. We've been talking about her piece, Mothers All Over Are Losing It. We have a link at WPR.org/Central Time. It's been nearly 3 years since former President Donald Trump and former Governor Scott Walker broke ground on Foxconn's planned manufacturing facilities in Mount Pleasant. Since that time, most of the commitments made by Foxconn and politicians involved have not been fulfilled. Corrine Hess has more.
It was a massive building with, I would say, few people working. I guess, to be honest, I didn't know what was real and what was framed up for the touring.
Last week, Foxconn executives announced plans to begin manufacturing electric vehicles for a California-based startup. In a joint statement, the companies boasted the collaboration will revolutionize the automotive industry, comparing themselves to Isaac Newton. It wasn't the first time Foxconn has announced an attention-grabbing partnership. In 2019, the company was going to make automated coffee kiosks. In 2020, it was ventilators. But both projects ended soon after being announced. Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz is a longtime critic of Foxconn.
Everything that they've promised so far, none of it has been true, and none of it has played out.
In 2017, Foxconn claimed it would create 13,000 jobs in the state. Hintz says Wisconsin operations have appeared to be virtually non-existent.
From the beginning, the lack of transparency, the lack of honesty, and the lack of accountability from Foxconn really plagued the you know, their overall project and investment.
Since Foxconn became a known entity in Wisconsin, the company has made promises across the state. For some people, Foxconn's arrival 3 years ago brought hope for more than just a massive manufacturing campus in southeastern Wisconsin. The worldwide company's arrival here brought a dream for new technologies and new educational opportunities. In 2019, Foxconn announced it would locate its North American headquarters in downtown Milwaukee. The company promised 500 research and development employees in the city. Milwaukee's Common Council member, Robert Bauman, whose district includes downtown Milwaukee, says he hasn't heard from Foxconn since the announcement. He says he was skeptical from the beginning.
But, you know, these were the claims they were making, so they obviously were a huge employer, very large worldwide company. You know, maybe they knew something we didn't. Well, it turns out they didn't.
After the Milwaukee announcement, Foxconn made plans to open what the company called innovation centers in Racine, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Madison. These would have been hubs where engineers could work and develop new technology. Foxconn bought buildings, but the workers never came. Kevin Vonk was a development director until August in Green Bay. He worked closely with Foxconn and says for a while it seemed real.
The meetings became fewer and far between. They had some staff turnover, and you know, Green Bay just did not seem, you know, that was their top priority.
Foxconn didn't respond to requests for comment on the innovation centers or other questions. Technology and education seemed to be a top priority for the company. In August 2018, Foxconn announced plans to invest $100 million at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. University spokesman John Lucas says the company donated a total of $700,000, less than 1% of what it pledged. It went to research projects at the College of Engineering. Lucas says the university will continue to reach out to companies, including Foxconn, to see if they're interested in additional partnerships. In a statement to WPR, Foxconn representatives say market conditions have changed over the last 3 years. They say they're working with the state on a plan that will benefit Wisconsin taxpayers and give them flexibility. Last October, Racine County Supervisor Jody Spencer joined other elected officials on a tour of Foxconn's Mount Pleasant facility given by the company.
It was a massive building with, I would say, few people working. I guess, to be honest, I didn't know what was real and what was framed up for the touring.
When Foxconn was first announced, Spencer was a mail carrier in Racine. And like a lot of other people, she was doubtful that the company could live up to its promises. She says the tour didn't change her mind. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to two sponsors of a bipartisan bill that would bring ranked choice voting to Wisconsin's congressional elections. We'll find out how that would work and why they say this is a good time to do it. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on the morning show, Wisconsin State Park saw a big jump in visitors last year. No surprise during the pandemic. We'll find out what that means for the park system, and you can join in with your stories, maybe your favorite park experiences. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, a new bill would bring ranked choice voting to Wisconsin's congressional elections. The proposal, which has some bipartisan support in both the Assembly and Senate, would create a so-called Final Five system where voters would rank candidates in order of their preference rather than choosing just one. Primaries in those congressional races would be officially nonpartisan. Maine started using ranked choice voting in 2016. Alaska will join in the coming year. It's also in place on the local level in cities and counties around the country. We're joined now by two sponsors of the new Wisconsin bill, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see ranked choice voting here in the state? What do you like or not like about it? Should we try it out for all elections here in the state, not just Congress? Do you feel limited by being able to choose just one candidate on a ballot? Or do you like the system as it is? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Dale Coinga is a Republican representing the state's 5th Senate district in Brookfield. Senator Coinga, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Smith is a Democrat representing the 31st Senate District in Eau Claire. Senator Smith, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Senator Coingut, start us off with a little bit about the nuts and bolts. I gave a very short version of how this would work. Flesh that out for us, please.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think most people agree that the political process is broken, or at least the political outcome is broken. We have a lot of people in office that really say things and sometimes do things and sometimes even propose legislation that really caters to the extreme sides of the political spectrum. And if, you know, when I look at my Twitter feed or when I look at, you know, some political conversations, it tends to go that direction. But when I'm in my church, when I'm in my business world or in uniform for the military, or even like sometimes in politics where the cameras aren't on, most people aren't political beings that see things black and white. And a lot of folks don't want ideology always driving the train politically. They just want good, solid leaders who are going to do the right thing. So the process is that instead of having primaries, you would vote for your top five candidates who you think would be the best choice to go on to the next round. And in November, you would rank the choice, saying, hey, I like this guy. He's number one. And this guy, I think, would be a disaster. He's number five. And then you could rank people in between. So essentially, you're making it very clear, like, hey, this person would be okay. I have him as number two. But, like, I absolutely think this guy would be a disaster, which is why they're number five. So it's as simple as that. I mean, some people are a little intimidated because it's different than the current process. But I'll just wrap up my very, very brief summary is that if you think politics is working the way it is, then don't make any changes. But if you believe that the system is broken, then let's look at the system. And right now, the current system, the primary process, it really caters to a certain segment of the Democrat and Republican primaries. And I don't believe that those segments, and Jeff doesn't believe those segments, and many other people locking arms with us on this, don't believe that those segments that oftentimes rule the primary process are really representative of the larger population.
Yeah, Senator Smith, can you spell out a little for us more why this system would lead maybe to less partisanship, maybe even less gridlock than what we got now?
Well, I think Dale did a really good job of laying this out. I think what you'll find is people oftentimes just feel like their voice is not heard. They only have two choices from one party or the other. And I think this offers an opportunity for people to have their voice heard, even if their favorite candidate and shares their views isn't going to be the final person who wins this election. They get the opportunity to vote for that person and again have their voice heard, and that could be their first choice. They don't feel like they're actually stuck voting for someone they probably don't like. You know, you hear all the time, oh, I have to vote for the better of two bad options or something. You know, that's unfortunately that, and I don't agree with that, but unfortunately people really feel that way. So I think this is really an opportunity for people to feel like their voice can be heard. And you know, they don't even have to actually rank all five candidates. They only have to pick as many as they choose that they feel are legitimate candidates.
And Senator Coingut, getting into the nuts and bolts a little more, in one district, that group, that final five, it could include a Republican and a Democrat and three independents or something. It could be three Republicans and two Democrats, right? We could, depending on the district and who's running, you could have a lot of different variety within each congressional race. Do I have that right?
Yeah. So I think it's helpful to kind of just pick a geography and walk through the rationale. So I'm going to pick Milwaukee, for example, and it's probably not news to anybody here that if you're on the third ward of Milwaukee, you're going to have a Democrat representative, right? So the person who wins that seat is going to be the person that wins that primary as the system stands today. And the person that wins that primary is probably going to be the person that presents themselves in the campaign as the farthest left of the candidates. Not always, but generally speaking, that's usually who would win that seat. There's a lot of Republicans. I mean, there's thousands of Republicans. There's even more probably more moderate Democrats that, you know, for whatever reason, didn't vote in that Democratic primary. And what this process would do is in that district, it would probably have five candidates that were different shades of left to center. Maybe there's a Republican in there. If there's a Republican there, maybe that Republicans vote for number one. But when that Republican doesn't have a shot because of the district, that person would it would revert to their number two choice, right? And so maybe they choose a more moderate Democrat like Jeff Plaley. Jeff Plaley was a Democrat from that district. He lost the primary to Chris Larson, who's much farther to the left of him. And so the point of that is, and you could take the same scenario and you could turn it around in other parts of the state where it's a lot more red. And Democrats there don't have a say. So essentially what it does is it empowers a larger segment of the population to have a say in who the representative is. And I'll just really quickly say this, is that this isn't necessarily about changing the people in office per se. I mean, it may impact that, and that would be, you know, great in some circumstances. But really what it's about is changing the behavior of people in those offices. And the behavior of people in those offices right now, whatever side you're on, one of the rules is never tick off the base, never tick off the base. And there's less concentration on the larger populace in both political parties. What the system change would do is it would encourage folks to look at the larger impact policies have on the population versus only worrying about getting through the next primary.
And Senator Smith, the legislation would only be for congressional elections. Why just our federal representation? Why not governor and assembly and senate and things like that?
Well, I can't speak for anyone else, but at the start of this, I certainly was in favor of giving ranked choice voting a try up and down the ballot. But I really understand how this is going to be a huge, huge change for voters and give them an opportunity to try it out at a level that they probably have a better understanding of when it comes to congressional races. That's what they pay attention to. I think this is a good place to start. And by the way, you know, Dale and I don't always get an opportunity to work together on something that we agree on. And I'm really thrilled and excited to get that opportunity here. And maybe we can make that difference at this level with congressional seats. And the other thing, let's face it, Congress is suffering from pretty low ratings right now. And they have for a long time. And I think Dale really made a good point of saying this isn't about necessarily changing the faces or the names, maybe, but it's certainly going to change behaviors and actually give freedom to legislators at the congressional level to serve their constituency rather than their party.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Matthew is with us in Pleasant Prairie. Matthew, hi.
I just wanted to say I love the idea of ranked voting. I heard about it in 2016, and I thought, man, that makes so much sense. You want the far left Democrat candidate who only represents Democratic views, and the Republican has to be the opposite of that guy. You'll get a more true politician with their own beliefs, and I think you'll get better options.
Matthew, thanks for the call. Senator Smith, Matthew is on board. We've got a bipartisan support here from the sponsors. Do you think that the rest of the legislature is going to be as enthusiastic as Matthew was?
Good question. That is, we'll find out. Take their temperature. I know that there's been support on my side of the aisle for pure ranked choice voting for a while. This, again, is not necessarily the same thing. This is final five voting. This gives the opportunity at the primary level to actually shed yourself of a label or as a voter and just vote for your favorite candidate and move them on to the final five and then rank them at the general election. So it isn't the exact same thing. And I know some of my colleagues on my side of the aisle might have questions about that, but I think we have a good chance, and I guess Dale would have to tell us what the temperature is on his side of the aisle.
What do you think, Senator Koiga?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to agree with Senator Smith's comments that I would also support this at the state level offices. And the reason that the coalition that was formed is focusing on the congressional level is because their approval rating is about a third or a half of what the legislatures are across the country. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough sell. I mean, you're looking at changing a system that is supporting the current system fairly well. I mean, obviously the people that are there, the political people in the process is serving where we're at. So why would you change the process? So this is a change that is consequential. And therefore, what I always say when you look at legislation is you can measure the impact by the resistance. And because I believe this will have a positive impact, you could expect resistance. And so we're going to push it. And, you know, most bills don't pass the first time. Most bills do fail across many different subjects. But we're going to take it step by step. Right now, as part of that step, is making the case to people around the state. And we appreciate the opportunity to do that. The next step would be to do the same thing, but in a public forum through a hearing. So we'll fight for a hearing. And we're just going to step by step by step. And, you know, what's the good part of this is we don't have to spend too much time on the problem, because most people realize there's a problem. And then we get to the solution and we're going to keep pushing. So I think it's going to be a tough sell. I don't want to oversell this thing as like, you know, that we could get this done tomorrow. It's going to be a tough sell. But, you know, Senator Smith and Representative Reamer and others are definitely in for the fight.
We've got two state senators with us, Republican Dale Koiga, Democrat Jeff Smith. They are co-sponsoring a bill that would change Wisconsin's congressional elections, a ranked choice type of thing with a final five format. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like the sound of this? What questions do you have about it and how it would work? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation, hear from more of you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about ranked choice voting, a final five format for Wisconsin's congressional elections. We've got two state senators with us sponsoring the bill, Democrat Jeff Smith, Republican Dale Koiga. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Back to your calls now. John is with us in Heartland. John, hi.
Hi. The thought I have as far as improving the confidence of voting, and it's basically when you or when I would vote and I would rank my vote, I would like at some point after the election to be able to opt in to either an email or a snail mail providing me the results that, you know, I put into the machine, my voting machine. So basically validating or verifying my vote to me. That would improve my confidence in the system.
John, interesting point. John wants receipts and he wants the work to be shown as to how his five ranks shook out. Senator Koiga, is there a process to do that, do you think?
Well, if there's not a process, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about right now, is that if you look at voting in our country, it's been... it's kind of the story of our country, right? Where the preamble says, in order to form a more perfect union. And we saw from the beginning that voting rights, like our country, wasn't perfect. And we continue to extend that to minorities and women and then make the process more safer and transparent. And so that process is underway right now. Some is controversial, some is non-controversial. But I was an auditor for 10 years, and that was what I did in part, was to create systems and processes that build confidence and increase transparency. And I think that a system like that, that was explained by the caller, is something that we could shoot for eventually as far as creating that transparency. And, you know exactly that your vote was counted. And I've been there. Like, I've been in combat and done an absentee ballot. And you're like, I wonder if that's going to get there and be counted. And you just never really know for sure. I mean, you could kind of subsequently see if the vote was counted. You don't know which way. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of folks are open to improvements in the system. And that's a great idea.
Thanks for that call. And Senator Smith, are there lessons that, as you look to Maine, which is doing their own version of ranked choice, are there lessons we can learn in Wisconsin if we tackle something like this on how to handle logistics?
You know, there really is. And one of those to keep in mind that there's a cost attached. There's always a cost attached. And one of the things that holds some municipalities back from doing this, Minneapolis was one of those that for a long time had this on their books, but they've eventually repealed it because they never did come around with the funding to pay for the software, the machines and the training that all that go with this. So we have to keep that in mind as well. That's not necessarily part of the original bill here. And so we have to be sure to address that and trust our clerks. And I know, and I appreciate what John is saying, but our clerks do a great work and amazing things they have to do. And they have to put up with us, so always changing the rules on them. But one of those things is that we have to support them with training, with the funding to be able to pay for the new software and machines that will have to deal with this ranked choice idea. And nothing's going to be easy, and it's going to be a new system. And what John is suggesting would also be very new too.
Thanks for the call, John. We'll go to Pat next in Green Bay. Pat, hello.
Hi there. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
Good. What do you think, Pat?
I'll tell you, I'm not too thrilled with it. I think that more than anything, because of all the stuff that's been going on, this is just an appeasement for the rhetoric that was spewed by our former president. If it's a ranking for example, I'm a Democrat, but I also have, there's been times where I have voted Republican. However, if I'm going to do this ranked voting, I want it for my party. I don't want to see, you know, it blended together, because that to me, it's not right. You know, when it comes down to it, it should be the top vote getter from each one of the parties. And that's how it should be.
Pat, thanks for the call. Pat doesn't want to abandon that primary system, it sounds like. Running a little short on time, Senator Coingo, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I respect his. I mean, it's people have their preferences on how they want to do this. So, you know, we appreciate feedback like that. And ultimately, if feedback like that is the consensus of most Wisconsinites, then, you know, it's probably not going to happen. If most people like the concept and voice that to the representatives and senators, then we have more wind behind our back. So, but I appreciate the opinion. And, I don't think it's a preference. Like, how do you want to see this go forward? And the question is, does he think that will change? Is he happy with the current process is the question. And does he think that what he proposes would significantly change the process to make it better? And that's what I leave you with. With no criticism of what he put out there, just saying this is a similar idea, but in a broader sense.
Thanks for that call. And Senator Smith, just our last few moments, leave us with your thoughts, your hopes for this change in our system.
Well, I think our last caller just hit on one of the most important pieces that people are going to be concerned with. We currently have a partisan primary, and I think that's what he's describing. That he doesn't want to lose that chance for Democrats picking a Democrat and Republicans picking a Republican. So that's going to be one of the big changes we're going to have to resolve with ourselves and with voters. So I'm excited about the idea. I have been for a long time. And then this version of it came along, and a chance to work with Senator Kuyenga along with it, all this to me is an exciting opportunity to try something and give it a shot and see if we can help fix Congress.
We'll leave it there, Senator.
And I just want to thank Representative Tony Kurtz, too. I didn't mention him earlier. He's one of the bill authors as well.
Credit where credit's due. Senator Smith, thanks for joining us today. And
you're
Senator
Coingo, thank you.
And Senator Coingo, thank you. We've been talking to Republican State Senator Dale Coingo, Democrat Jeff Smith, both in the state Senate, looking at a bill that would put in nonpartisan primaries and a kind of ranked choice voting system for Wisconsin congressional elections. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics, including the newest COVID-19 relief bill that's making its way now to the U.S. Senate. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone in person or on the phone or online and you felt like the conversation went longer than it really needed to? Doesn't happen here on the air, but in real life, we've all been there. You're not alone. There's a good chance the other person in that conversation felt the same way. As reported in the journal Science, new research in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences put conversations to the test. Now, they brought together people to chat, and then they asked them afterwards about how long the conversation was. Only 2% of the conversations ended when both participants actually wanted them to. In most cases, not all, but most cases, those conversations went on longer than either one wanted them to. What's going on there? According to this and other research, one person feels done with the conversation, doesn't think the other person wants to be done, and they don't want to offend their conversation partner, so they keep going. But there's a good chance the other person feels exactly the same way, so they keep going. I've encountered this in real life over the years. At WPR offices, when we were actually, you know, lots of us at the offices, it got to be a running joke. Standing in someone's office doorway as a conversation petered out, we would just say, awkward ending, and then walk away. My favorite conversation ender, though, was my wife's late grandmother on phone calls. When she was done with whatever she'd called about, she just hang up. No goodbye, just done. Let's make that a thing. We just stop talking.